You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
The last week, or the last 2 weeks, I don't know how many times I said the phrase Happy New Year, but I think it was like more than my whole life combined. And it's not really like my thing. Like New Year's isn't like, I don't know. It's not like I'm Mr. New Year's or something like that, or, you know, the day after Christmas, people start like just putting it in everything, or somebody's going to see you in February or March and say, oh, I haven't seen you since this year. Happy New Year. You know, and I get a kick out of that. I think it's funny, but it's not like my thing. But this year, it kind of was my thing. It meant something different to me when me and some of you, a bunch of folks were marching through Kensington yelling Happy New Year while wearing elaborate garb with a mummer's brigade and people redistributing cookies, knocking on every door on the blocks that we went through. And also I got to join a new band that was a 22-piece brass band from France. And I was the only non-French member, which made me feel real special. And just playing with all the horns. And it was something more than just kind of saying, Happy New Year. But we were embodying what a Happy New Year is like. It's going around just wishing this goodness like Victoria was trying to get us to do. And I didn't rap on any doors myself because I think that's rude. But plenty of other people were doing it. The response how do you express that? In your body? How do you express that, not just with words, but with this joyful action? That was kind of what we were trying to get into. And that's what Epiphany is about. You're familiar with that holiday? So we still have our Advent candles up because yesterday, by most calendar reckonings, although you can debate these historically and which tradition of the church has it, but those 12 days of Christmas kind of end with Epiphany, or a lot of the Orthodox Christians are doing Christmas today. If you're down with the Orthodox folks, Merry Christmas. But Epiphany is this essentially from the Greek word that means manifestation. I think sometimes we think it needs to be like, oh, the light bulb turned on. That's kind of okay. Like you had an epiphany or something, but that's not really what this holiday is really about. But there's the two significant moments in the church history. It says this is what Epiphany is about. We build this into the rhythm of our year together because we want to remember consciously when the Magi came from the East to Jesus as a little baby to say, this one is God being born in this vulnerable, tiny little baby in a weird circumstance. God is made known, born in that baby. And also when Jesus is baptized, it's the feast of Jesus' baptism. When again, God is kind of bending over, bending low, going through this rite of passage, doing this ceremonial repentance with us. And John, the baptizer, reports the voice of God saying that Jesus is God's own son. That's a significant epiphany. There's Jesus in the water in a cool way. The liturgical calendar is a fancy way to say, like, when are the feasts? When are the big Christian holidays? And that rhythm of the year can be a really useful tool for storytelling, for entering into consciously God's story. When it comes up again, it's not just it's that time of year again. Let's not do that. Let's see if we can actually take a step into those moments in the story and see where God is intersecting with our story now. But it's a chance to remember with all Christians that God reveals God's self in many ways. You've experienced that differently than me in some ways, but especially in the person and in the way of Jesus. So tonight we're working with a lot of tradition, And we're moving with God from it into this present time. And we can look at Jesus as God made manifest. And we can look to Jesus to again make himself manifested in us, in the community that the Holy Spirit's forming through us. So here's some of the scripture. There's two significant pieces that I want to touch on that are stories that a lot of you are very familiar with. This is from Matthew chapter 2. As Jesus was born in Bethlehem in the territory of Judea during the rule of King Herod, according to this map, that would be Herod the Great's kingdom. That was when it was all big and relatively speaking, and then it gets divided up after he dies. Magi came from the east to Jerusalem, the center of power, and they asked, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We've seen his star in the east, and we've come to honor him." When King Herod heard this, he was troubled, and everyone in Jerusalem was troubled with him. He gathered all the chief priests and the legal experts and asked them where the Christ was to be born. And they said, "In Bethlehem, in Judea, for this is what the prophet wrote. You, Bethlehem, land of Judah, by no means are you least among the rulers of Judah, because from you will come one who governs, who will shepherd my people, Israel." So the king secretly called for the Magi and found out from them the time when the star had first appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search carefully for this child. And when you found him, report to me, so that I too may go and honor him." You can read in the little evil cackle. He's trying to trick them. And when they heard the king, they went. And look, the star that they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stood over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. Falling to their knees, they honored him. And they opened their treasure, and they presented the baby with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And because they were warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they went back to their own country by another route. Now the Magi are the wise men that they sometimes get told, you know, that expression in Greek likely was meaning a particular ethnic group that lived in Asia Minor and the sort of the Greek-speaking lands there, but they're originated probably from modern-day Iran. So they're Persian. They're not part of this same people group's story. They're bringing a different spiritual reality. They're bringing different understandings of politics, maybe even of honor in some ways. And they're coming, following this mysterious star that I also wish was explained more. But while they're wise, they look to the king and the power structure first. They see the star and know that the new king is to be born, so they go to the current king, see to congratulate him maybe, see how's your new baby, how's this next rendition of the world here going along. Only to find the ruler there full of deceit, and I'm sure they saw some of the corruption. Being wise, they also followed the star to the right place to give their also symbolic but practical gifts. And wisely, they ignore the request of the king and go back home another way. They do not go through Jerusalem. They don't help out with the king's next plans. Like we spoke about during Advent, the Gospel of Luke tells the story of the shepherds receiving this news. They tell the story about how Mary was processing this news. And Matthew's account gives the detail of dreams of Joseph being told that it's going to be okay, being warned about what Herod is about to do to flee, speaking to the Magi in dreams. And the Magi themselves are in that kind of narrative. the Holy Family, as they're sometimes called, flees. What happens next is the massacre of the innocents, when the king, trying to get to Jesus, orders the slaughter of a few thousand babies in that region. And they flee as a refugee journey to Egypt. And the Magi also illustrate a commonly overlooked theme in the Bible, but it's there so many times. God speaking and moving beyond the institutions, the ethnic groups, the power structures, the way things used to be, beyond what we expect. So my question for you, or two questions, would, how might you even be caught up now in the same kind of pattern thinking of, this is how God is going to work. This is how God is. This is how I work. This is how I am. Are you still open to being surprised? When God is born as a baby, I think that's pretty cosmically amazing. The uncharacterizable one becoming low and being vulnerable. And likewise, to be baptized is a similar movement that Jesus demonstrates. In the next chapter, in Matthew 3, at that time, Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan River so that John would baptize him. John, the baptizer, tried to stop him and said, I need to be baptized by you, yet you come to me. And Jesus answered, allow me to be baptized now. This is necessary to fulfill all righteousness. So John agreed to baptize Jesus. And when Jesus was baptized, he immediately came up out of the water. Heaven was open to him. And he saw the Spirit of God coming down like a dove and resting on him. A voice from heaven said, this is my Son, whom I dearly love. I find happiness in him. Like we talked about Advent, during Advent, John the baptizer gives us a lot, but especially as this forerunner, as this person who indicates who Jesus truly is. One of the things I love about Epiphany is that it orients the story of God moving as an underdog story. When the longer we go with God, whether it's the Hebrew Bible and the narrative of those people, you can see it in the New Testament, and you probably can see it in your own life. The further along you go, the more you understand how stuff generally works. The more comfortable you become, the more of a tendency we have to drift. And that drift can be really useful because you can snap out of it. It's like when you're falling asleep and you do the shutter. Have you ever minded your own sleepy shutter? The movie Inception really nails at that thing, but like it helped Martha with one of the great mysteries of sleeping next to me for all these years, because I think I hold some kind of record for the biggest spasm of most people when I'm falling asleep. Sometimes there's even a loud noise. But that drift could be useful to us because we can wake up real quick and be like, oh, I was falling asleep. But it's also Epiphany is this underdog story. The powerful continually will try to co-opt the narrative, say this is the story that everybody has to fit into neatly, and if you don't, you are on the outside. That is always not going to work out because it's not the truth. That narrative of the powerful co-opting the gospel will not endure because it's missing this essential touch of God becoming vulnerable, of God taking the posture of those than less than power. God chose to be born in harsh political realities and still does. God chose to be born to rather lowly parents in a strange moment. Those parents get equipped for their journey while their despotic ruler tries to wipe out a generation to stifle the coming of this movement of God. because it was a threat to power, and it still is. It's still happening, but these problems can reveal God working. Me and Martha last week had a little bit of a sink problem. Kitchen sink leaking into the basement. Neither of us are particularly excellent with fixing most things. However, we've both dabbled with those pipes under the sink. And last year, Martha replaced the in-sinkerator by herself while I was away. Quite impressive. Now we're having a problem, and as we're getting all up into there, trying to figure out how to do group work plumbing in tight spaces. Here's the thing about plumbing in my experience and her experience. We both do it okay. We both do it alone. And generally speaking, if I'm in a confined place with like gnarly stuff getting on me, I would prefer to do that kind of without somebody asking me if I'm okay, yada, yada. And anyway, and here she clearly is taking the lead, and I'm her assistant. Getting the gnarly stuff that goes down our drain on us was a strange occurrence. Not something that we really wanted to do that evening, but even that problem caused us to do some teamwork. It was an occasion for teamwork. And it was an occasion for us to, even while we fixed it for now, I think my real reward was that she and I are a good team and we can solve some problems. That's really useful in the world because problems are easy to come by. And then we brought a meal for Vivian McIntosh Brix's family after we washed our hands and got to see again so beautiful and precious and fragile this new life is, and how good babies smell. And that's how our hearts even truly are so often, beautiful, precious, fragile, even vulnerable. And when we're honest about it and open ourselves up to God, that's precisely where we're touched. Those places where we're most fragile and vulnerable when things aren't working out are where God can work. Some of you have been, following Padraig O Tuama, but his recent book, In the Shelter, Finding a Home in the World, is a pretty easy read, and it will, I think, encourage a lot of your sensibilities. But this is a small excerpt from the chapter called Hello to Power. We create stories that protect an idea and use power to exclude or include based on the same idea. History has shown that no religious or social ideology is immune from the capacity to make its doors as sharp as they are open, branding those who enter or maiming those who leave. Part of this, I'm convinced, is because we speak in singular terms. I am a person, and I have faith, and I belong to a group. Surely by now we must know that we are plural. I am peoples with faiths and belongings. I have capacities and incapacities, and my power too is plural, hopefully hurting less with years. Hello to the power of belonging. Hello to the responsibility of the power of belonging. The power and responsibility is often not felt so much when everything is going right. When you get the outcome you wanted, when your expectations were met, when you did A and it logically led to B. But when there's failure, when there are unexpected snow days, when there's something worth celebrating that pops up, we can sense that responsibility of the power of belonging. There's some of the best wisdom in the New Testament comes in Paul's second letter to the Corinthians in chapter 12, where Paul is talking about being kind of jacked up, which is a theme if you really get into his letters, talking about his own limits, his own issues, his own struggles. And here he's kind of waxing poetic about his own issues. And then he comes to this point where he says that God said to me, my grace is enough for you because power is made perfect in weakness. And he goes on, but that's it. That God's grace is enough for us because power is made perfect in weakness. It's the same underdog story that we love so much. Are you familiar yet with Star Wars? It's the story of all the good ones. The good Star Wars is, that is. If you get into the Sixers at all and see their emergence, trust the process is all about this, in learning how to endure problems so that you can build a foundation for good things to happen. It's the same for us as we journey together. It's the moments where God's most evident aren't where things go great, although those are nice, and I think we should be grateful for them. Even when we were talking about some good things, good wishes, or when we were ruminating together about the good things that have happened, I think that we should appreciate them and hope for more, and I think there will be more. But when we're enduring those dry times, when we're feeling weary, those are moments, I think, where we can even check out a little bit and say, when the circumstances change, then I shall reengage. When I feel X, then I shall really think that, I don't know, faith is useful to me. Or when I get the job that I deserve, when my boss stops acting like this, when my kids are all grown up, that's when I'll have, I don't know, some kind of availability for God. But really, it's those, the longer I go along in the journey, the more I realize that it's usually in retrospect, but it's those moments of weariness where I felt most thin and was able to turn to God. That's where the real faith is built, and that's the kind of faith that lasts. And when we endure things together, our faith grows, and our faith is made beautiful for others to even be able to receive something from.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.